Today is Monday, November the 10th, and this is Kathy reading you the News Gazette for Monday. This first article on the front page, Rob Locate's name dropping, runs in the family. Brother's encouragement kick-started officer's career. Never in a million years did Kaylin Fisher think she would be a second lieutenant in Champaign's police department. But nudged by her older brother, it's a path she followed. Matthew Fisher lived and breathed firefighters. In contrast, law enforcement always caught her eye. The rudimentary principles of anti-bullying and doing good, even when people weren't looking, helped her ideals mesh well with the policing. I just don't like it when people are mean to each other, and I know that sounds very elementary, she said. I believe in treating everyone with the dignity you would want someone to treat you with. Unfortunately, her confidence held her back from applying. Lucky for her, an adamant brother called her one day after he graduated from college and encouraged her to apply for an open position at the Champaign Police Department. He, in turn, would pursue an open job at the city's fire department. She worked at a factory back home in Gibson City, and her brother convinced her to send in an application. 6 months after Matthew got the job, Caitlin received a call offering her the position that she, of course, took. Your big brother goes into a burning building, so to say, you're going to follow him in to make sure he comes out, she said. One of the first hurdles was maintaining her physically for a job that one day may require pulling someone out of a wrecked car, and the next day chasing someone in a car. She studied exercise science and physical therapy at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, which helped her training. I told myself and my family that I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it the men's standard, she said. I don't want to be treated differently because I'm a female. With all three of her brothers being athletes and her father a former high school coach, they helped her with weightlifting, speed, and endurance. I was also very blessed that the men in my life championed the women in theirs because they said, there's nothing you can't do that we can't do, she said. She learned best by watching and listening to her older brothers, which prepared her for the job. I think that put me in a great place to do law enforcement, she said. There's so much to learn when you become an officer. You don't get the polyester suit, the gun, or the badge, and it just makes you better than someone else. You have to be someone's protector. She spent 3 years as an investigator for victims of violent crimes. A case she recalled involved a little boy who was struck by a bullet before Christmas. First responders pooled together donations and bought him presents delivered via fire truck. To this day, families still keep in touch, which reminded her of a beauty in the world that she doesn't see every day. Those are the God winks through a career, because it is a notoriously tough career, she said. You're seeing people at their worst, and it's a lot of negatives that the average person may not see. Early into their careers, the siblings worked the same Thanksgiving shift. Caitlin and her unit were first to arrive at the home in Southwest Champaign for a boy choking. She entered the residence and started CPR and tried to dislodge whatever was stuck. This is potentially my first big life-saving moment, or this is a family's most tragic night where their child could die, she said. She continued compressions as her mind raced. The next person through the door was her older brother. She handed the boy to him. They rushed the boy to the hospital, and an hour later, Matthew called her to tell her the boy was fine. That call helped solidify her confidence that she belonged on the force. She said it was one of the big brother saves the day moments because few careers save children on holidays. I was so appreciative and grateful to him for pushing me into that career, she said. What a fun story and memory that I will forever share with my big brother. Fisher, who finished her 12th year on the force in September, received the 2025 Lee Bensel Law Enforcement Officer Award from the Piatt County Veterans of Foreign Wars, Post 5346 in Monticello. The honor was established in 2019 and is available to any officer who lives or works in the Piatt County. Champaign officers like Chris Oberheim and Dave McLernan earned the honor in the past. A friend approached her and asked her to help with a nomination letter. She jumped at the opportunity to help whoever was put up for the award. Somehow everyone kept that she was nominated a secret from her. It floored me a little, she said. I was not expecting it. Unbeknownst to her, her chief and several others nominated her. Past award winners set an example of what righteousness looks like and what a windfall mindset looks like, she said. To be named on the same board as them is, I don't have words for it. Gibson Queen of Hearts, $16,000 jackpot claimed. The Queen has been found in Gibson. No, not the Monarch, the card version. Betty Benningfield had her ticket pulled to flip a card for the Gibson City Restoration Association's raffle. To her luck, she picked the Queen of Hearts and won the jackpot of $16,000, $421. Wayne Bode won the 50-50 raffle, earning $228. The organization will take next week off to prepare the drawing, resuming November 19th. Tuscola FFA alumni earns top honors. Only around 1% of members receive the FFA American degree, and a recent Tuscola High School graduate joined that VIP club last month. Donning the blue jacket changed Michelle Reese for the better. Everything I did, not only to earn my American degree, but throughout my FFA career, helped shape who I am today, she said. It taught me the importance of leadership, perseverance, and community, and it helped me grow my confidence in public speaking and teamwork. The sophomore agricultural business student at Lakeland completed all the FFA degree requirements for the prestigious award. She received 3 other FFA degrees, stayed as an active officer in her high school chapter, kept detailed records of projects, activity, and event planning, and did community service hours. The degree also requires a pursuit in higher or post-secondary education and skills in planning, management, finances, and academic excellence. During high school, she started as a secretary her sophomore year and made her way up to the vice president and president her junior and senior years, respectively. She thanked her family and community and the FFA alumni, teachers, and members who helped her reach her goal. I'm incredibly grateful to have such amazing people who have helped shape me and make this achievement possible, she said. Former Tuscola contractor recognized for 60 years of service. Bill Hulk, the former member owner of Hulk Construction in Tuscola, received his 60th year pin from the United Association of Plumbers and Pipe Fittings in Terre Haute last month. Fresh out of high school in August 1965, he joined his father's business. He made his way up the chain of command all the way from a pipe fitter to a project manager. He worked at the company for more than 40 years and traveled to more than 30 states for work. His father, Dick Hoke, was a 10-year member of the union in Decatur and Terre Haute. Dick Hoke was the third welder to pass the welding test when National Petrochemical Company opened in 1950s. Quinlan announced October Rantoul Exchange Club winner. Braid Quinlan has been named the Rantoul Exchange Club Student of the Month for October. The son of Scott and Rebecca Quinlan ranks fourth in his senior class at Rantoul Township High School with a grade point average of 5.77. His school activities have included cross country, track and field, student council, National Honor Society, and involvement in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. He achieved high honor roll every year in school, excellence in honors chemistry, investments, economics, algebra 2, and geometry, and received academic awards every year. He has volunteered for more than 90 hours combined at a church music team, mowing neighbors' lawns, landscaping, and caring for his church's parking lot and grass, working as an NHS member and helping out at the FCA Christmas dinners. Quinlan is self-employed, taking care of lawns for more than 3 years and helped a local farmer spray fields with fungicide using drones last summer. In the future, he plans to attend Parkland College for 2 years and pursue a real estate program, along with studying accounting and business to get his license. Parkland College scholarships on the rise. The number of fine arts scholarships available to Parkland College students has increased. Candy Foster established an endowment fund in her name and donated $25,000 to fund financial awards for the fall and spring semesters. Champaign County retired teacher honored at state convention. A Champaign County retired teacher was recognized at the Illinois Retired Teachers Association. Jan Neekum, Champaign County's chapter president, was honored as a CCRTA's unit honoree for his 6 years of service. More than 40,000 members could vote electronically for the statewide organization's president and board of officers. Danville Rotary donates to local groups. The Danville Noon Rotary Club distributed $5,000 raised through this year's Memorial Way project. Proceeds from the flag sponsor donations were awarded to the following recipients: Dax Foundation, Sparky Songer Scholarship Fund, Vermilion County War Museum, American Legion Post 210, Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 3510, and Veterans Affairs, Ileana Healthcare System Homeless Program. And the writer of this article, Rob LaCates, is a multimedia reporter at the News Gazette. This next article is about the Virginia Theater, an encore for Eberfest in 2026. co-founder reaches out to patrons about One Last Dance by Jeff Alessio. Would you be interested in attending one final Eberfest in 2026? That's the question Festival co-founder Chaz Ebert asked Virginia theater patrons in a brief email Saturday night, less than 2 months after announcing the bittersweet news that the 2025 marked the festival's last year in Champaign-Urbana. On Saturday, she wrote, "We've heard back from you, and we know that you would like to have one last dance," adding that the Virginia is holding April 17th through the 19th for the festival should there be a 27th edition. Fans were urged to fill out a two-question survey by next Friday, which asks if they'll attend a three-day festival with a different format than usual, full days on Friday and Saturday and a half day plus a steak and shake farewell party on Sunday, and whether they'd like to be contacted about sponsorship opportunities. In a September letter from Ebert and U of I College of Media Dean Tracy Sulkin, it was announced that financial considerations facing both universities and film festivals had forced organizers to reimagine the future of an event that has brought A-listers John Malkovich, Spike Lee, Oliver Stone, and Norman Lear, up-and-comers and unsung stars to town for screenings and conversations since launching at the Virginia in 1999. And there's a picture here of Chaz Ebert introducing the special guests who are present at the opening gala of the 23rd Ebert Fest. Wintry weather. Meteorologists warn of intense snow in the Great Lakes states, record lows in the south by Sophia Tureen. Large swaths of the U.S. awaited one of the season's first blasts of winter weather Sunday. As temperatures dipped and snow fell in the northern plains, snowstorms developed eastward across the Great Lakes and the south prepared for a big chill. Flurries fell Sunday morning across parts of the Chicago area, a precursor to an intense snowfall forecast to start in the evening of communities surrounding Lake Michigan, where the National Weather Service issued a winter storm warning into today with wind gusts of up to 30 miles and as many as 18 inches of snow. This band is going to drop some very heavy snow and some hairy scenarios for the Monday morning commute, said Weather Service meteorologist Kevin Doom in Romeoville, Illinois. As temperatures dropped across the nation's midsection, meteorologists warned of hazardous travel conditions through winter weather advisories for Michigan, Indiana, Wisconsin. Snow fell Sunday mornings in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, where meteorologists warning of low visibility with up to a foot by today. In Indiana, weather experts predicted up to 11 inches of snow and slippery surfaces for road travel. Up to 6 inches of snow were predicted in parts of Wisconsin. Patchy blowing snow and wind chills hovering near zero were expected in portions of Minnesota, Nebraska, and South Dakota. Some areas got measurable fluff a day earlier, including 4 inches of snow in southwest Minnesota and more than 5 inches in slices of northern Iowa. Cold weather warnings were issued for Ohio, West Virginia, and Kentucky, with freezing temperatures predicted through this morning for a large swath of the south from Texas and Oklahoma to Alabama and Georgia. Vermilion County War Museum, reenactors add to exhibits on Veterans Day by Jennifer Bailey. Vermilion County War Museum President Larry Weatherford says that they like to say that every day is Veterans Day at the War Museum. However, the national holiday means even more ways for visitors to learn about local history. The War Museum, 307 North Vermilion Street, will be open from noon to 4 p.m. on Tuesday, Veterans Day. We will point you out our newest exhibits to visitors as well as the museum-wide tours in our 14,000 square feet Carnegie Library building, Weatherford said. He added, "We'll have several reenactors on hand to add to the ambiance of your visit on Veterans Day. We have a school field trip, and the students will have an opportunity to visit our children's area, where Becky Woodrum will be reading patriotic stories. That will continue for those who would like to stop by after school. Children can also color, dress up in costumes from various eras of American history for pictures, and take home a small American flag." Weatherford said one of the highlights to see on Veterans Day will be for the Grand Army of the Republic display area. The GAR was the country's first nationwide veterans organization. It was formed in Illinois, and membership spread quickly. Vermilion County was one of the first counties to start a GAR post, and second only to Cook County in the number of posts established. We're expanding that area to include the VFW and American Legion post in the county, as well as display in honor of the local VA hospital, which started as the Soldiers and Sailors Home, he said. Since Veterans Day is on a Tuesday this year, we'll follow our summertime tradition of sounding taps on Tuesday. That will be at 2 p.m. in honor of all veterans. We will also be recording some veterans' video interviews and setting up times for others in our technology room studio, he said. The Vermilion County War Museum's new logo, signage, outdoor and indoor improvements, as well as expansion, are made possible thanks to grants from the City of Danville, Vermilion County, State of Illinois, foundation grants, and individual donations. The Veterans Day marks the start of our 26th year, and we continue to work hard every day to honor those who have served to keep our nation free, Weatherford said. In addition, a new wall of honor is planned for the southeast side of the War Museum building. We are currently selling bricks for the wall, which will honor both living and deceased veterans. This is being done as a fundraiser for museum operations, Weatherford said. Brochures with forms to fill out in honor of veterans are available at the museum. Each 4x8 brick is $200, and there's also an option to get a smaller block as a keepsake for home shelf. And there is a picture of the new signs out in front of the museum. Suspects sought in Champaign robbery of a woman's purse. Champaign County Crime Stoppers is asking for the public's help identifying a suspect in a robbery. At around 7:15 on October 9th, an unknown man robbed a woman of her purse in the 500 block of South Mattis Avenue. The purse was recovered, but the victim's wallet and checkbook were not. The suspect was last seen running toward Union Street from the Springfield and Mattis area. He was captured on video and was described as a dark-skinned black male. He was last seen wearing a black hat, a red and white windbreaker, and blue pants. If you have any information regarding this crime or any crime in Champaign County, please contact Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477. Tipsters are always 100% anonymous when contacting Crime Stoppers and receive a code number to check on rewards. All tips submitted to Crime Stoppers are electronically stripped of any personally identifying information and processed by a third-party answering service. James Watson, co-discoverer of the double helix shape of DNA, dies at age 97 by Malcolm Ritter. James D. Watson, whose co-discovery of the twisted ladder structure of DNA in 1953 helped light the long fuse on a revolution in medicine, crime fighting, genealogy, and ethics, and he has died. He was 97. The breakthrough, made when the brash Chicago-born Watson was just 24, turned him into a hallowed figure in the world of science for decades. But near the end of his life, he faced condemnation and professional censure for offensive remarks, including saying black people are less intelligent than white people. Watson shared a 1962 Nobel Prize with Francis Crick and Maurice Watkins for discovering that deoxyribonucleic acid, or DNA, is a double helix, consisting of two strands that coil around each other to create what resembles a long, gently twisting ladder. That realization was a breakthrough. It instantly suggested how hereditary information is stored and how cells duplicate their DNA when they divide. The duplication begins with the two strands of DNA pulling apart like a zipper. Even among non-scientists, the double helix would become an instantly recognized symbol of science, showing up in such places as the work of Salvador Dali and the British postage stamp. The discovery helped open the door to more recent developments, such as tinkering with the genetic makeup of living things, treating disease by inserting genes into patients, identifying human remains and criminal suspects from DNA samples, and tracing family trees and ancient human ancestors. Wanted in Champaign County. Name, Zakarlin M. Hayes, age 43. Last known address, the 2000 block of West Springfield Avenue, Champaign. Description, black female, 5 feet 5 inches, 175 pounds, black hair, brown eyes. Charges, driving under the influence, theft, resisting, and obstruction. If you have information, please contact Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477. The Big Lake they call Gitche Gumee. When it was completed in June 1958 at River Rouge, Michigan, the SS Edmund Fitzgerald was the largest ship at the Great Lakes. At 729 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 13,632 tons, it would remain the largest on the lakes for 13 years. The ship was commissioned by the Northwestern Mutual Insurance Company of Milwaukee, which had invested heavily in the iron and minerals business. It paid $8.4 million to build the ship, and it named it after the head of the company. The Edmund Fitzgerald's main task was to carry taconite, pellets of a low-grade iron ore, from the mining region at Silver Bay, Minnesota, to the steel mills on the Lower Lakes near Detroit and Toledo. By the time it met its fate, the ship had logged 748 round trips on the Great Lakes, roughly equivalent to 44 trips around the world. Boat watchers called the spectacular vessel the Mighty Fitz, the Toledo Express, the pride of the American side, and the queen of the Great Lakes. On November 9, 1975, the Edmund Fitzgerald's task was to sail from the Burlington Northern Railroad dock in Superior, Wisconsin, to a steel mill on Zug Island near Detroit. After 14 hours of loading its three giant cargo holds with taconite pellets, the ship set sail eastward at about 2:30 p.m. Master Captain Ernest McSorley, who was in his final voyage before retirement, took notice of gale warnings posted by the National Weather Service. When those warnings were upgraded the next morning, McSorley had the Edmund Fitzgerald head slightly more to the north than it normally would. The idea, let the coast of Ontario help shield some of the wind away from his vessel. The winds increased. The ship became damaged, losing its radar antenna. McSorley radioed that the Edmund Fitzgerald was taking on water, but it was unclear exactly why. Did it bottom out on shoals, or were the enormous waves drowning the vessel? The Edmund Fitzgerald needed just 15 more miles to make it to the relative safety and calmer waters of Whitefish Bay, but at some time after 7 p.m., the ship disappeared from radar, and no further radio contact was made. The Edmund Fitzgerald and its crew of 29 were lost. At 3:30 p.m. that afternoon, McSorley told the captain of the Anderson he had the fence rail down. He had lost two vents and his ship was listing. At 7:10, he told the other ship, "We are holding our own." But when the captain of the Anderson tried to check on the Edmund Fitzgerald 12 minutes later, he received no reply. Search vessels and a Coast Guard aircraft found magnetic contact, but no debris or other signs of the ship. It wasn't until the following May 20, 1976, that the Navy was able to photograph the wreck, 535 feet below the surface of Lake Superior. The Coast Guard released its official report of the accident in April 1977, admitting that the cause of the sinking couldn't be conclusively determined. It did say, however, that the most likely cause was a massive flooding of the cargo hold through the ineffective hatch closures. The ship's four cargo holds were served. The cargo holds were serviced by 21 steel hatch covers, each measuring 11 by 48 feet and weighing 7 tons. You can see those hatches in the photo. Oh, there is a photo of the ship afloat. Industry groups and family members of the victims strongly disagreed with this analysis. This is when the other ship's captain's observation came to play. It appeared as if the Edmund Fitzgerald, riding low in the water with its heavy load, may have bottomed out on shoals. At that point, it would have been a matter of time before the ship sank. A half century later, neither of these two theories or others that have been proposed have been proven. In July 1995, the ship's bell was recovered from the wreck and is now on display at the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum. The U.S. Coast Guard released its official report of the accident in April 1977, admitting the cause of the sinking couldn't be conclusively determined. Canadian folk singer Gordon Lightfoot had a passion for recreational sailing on the Great Lakes. He told NPR's Morning Edition in 2015 that he was inspired to write a song about the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald after reading an article about the accident in Newsweek. Lightfoot then noticed in subsequent coverage that newspapers misspelled the name of the ship Edmund Fitzgerald rather than Edmund Fitzgerald. He came up with a tune, wrote lyrics, and recorded the Hob song before the wreckage was discovered. The single was released in August of 1976 and hit number one on the Canadian singles chart. It peaked at number two on the U.S., held out by Rod Stewart's Tonight's the Night. The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald was nominated for a Grammy Award for Song of the Year, but was beaten out by Barry Manilow's I Write the Songs. After an official investigation of the sinking was released, however, Lightfoot became troubled by how some of his lyrics proved not to be factual. For example, his original version stated, at 7 p.m., a main hatchway caved in. He said, "Fellas, it's been good to know ya." Lightfoot changed that to, "At 7 p.m., it grew dark." And then he said, "Fellas, it's been to know ya." Later still, the original lyric describes the church where the shipwreck is commemorated as a musty old hall. After complaints from a parishioner of that church, Lightfoot changed the line to a rustic old hall. And the sources of this came from Mighty Fitz, The Sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald by Michael Schumacher, the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum, SS Edmund Fitzgerald Online, historical collections of the Great Lakes at Bowling Green State University, the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Awesome Mitten, The New York Times, Mental Floss, Songfacts, and WJON Radio. Report on the government shutdown. Flight cuts strain a supply chain already stretched thin. FAA announced a 10% reduction in flight capacity across 40 major U.S. airports by Mae Anderson. The Federal Aviation Administration's announcement of 10% reduction in flight capacity across 40 major U.S. airports could put a strain on air cargo as the peak holiday season approaches. Several airports with major package distribution centers are on the list of airports that will reduce capacity. FedEx has hubs at the airports in Indianapolis and Memphis, Tennessee. UPS's biggest hub, World Port, is in Louisville, Kentucky, the site of this week's deadly cargo plane crash. Meanwhile, UPS and FedEx had late Friday, they're grounding their fleets of McDonnell Douglas MD-11 planes out of an abundance of caution following the Tuesday crash, which killed 14 people, including the three pilots on the MD-11 headed for Honolulu. MD-11 aircrafts make up about 9% of the UPS fleet and 4% of the FedEx fleet, the company said. Logistic companies say consumers shouldn't expect delays on their packages due to a reduction in flights for now, but they put a strain on the supply chain ahead of the all-important holiday shopping season. It could take weeks before the MD-11s fly again. Patrick Penfield, a supply chain management professor at Syracuse University, called the 10% reduction in flight capacity and the grounding of the MD-11 planes a 1-2 punch for cargo carriers and shoppers. "This is such a stressful time for both companies, and you got this surge in demand, and then you just lost some of your capacity," Penfield said. "So they're already scrambling as it is during the holiday season, and they're going to scramble even more." Penfield thinks it could take weeks for UPS and FedEx to get their MD-11 flights back in service after a thorough review. He estimated that during the mid-December time frame, when shipping is at its peak, shoppers could see delays in deliveries by a day or two. He recommends ordering holiday gifts early. As for the 10% reduction in flight capacity, most air freight is international. The reduction in flights so far is only on domestic air travel, not global flights. Airlines transport about 35% of global trade by value, but only about 1% of world trade by volume, according to the trade group International Air Transport Association. The FAA order did not address cargo flights specifically, but directed air carriers at 40 airports to reduce their total daily scheduled domestic operations by 10% between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. local time at each airport. Air freight is carried not only by cargo planes, but also in the bellies of passenger aircraft. Most air shipping international so far unaffected. Shipping companies say they're adjusting plans due to the cutbacks. Both FedEx and UPS said many of their flights take place at night outside the restricted window. Both also said they had contingency plans to protect shipments of critical items like pharmaceuticals, medical devices, and essential manufacturing goods. FedEx said it made necessary operational modifications to meet the requirements so that shipments continue to move safely and swiftly through our network following the FAA order. UPS said it has built a network to be safe and resilient, and we're confident we can keep delivering the reliable service our customers count on. Western Global Airlines is the only other U.S. cargo airline that flies MD-11s, according to the aviation analytics firm Cirium. The airline has 16 MD-11s in its fleet, but 12 of them have already been put in storage. The company did not immediately respond to an email seeking comment. And that's the end of part one of the News Gazette for Monday, November the 10th. This is Kathy saying I'll be right back.